An Osho Talk. The Book of Nothing, Sin Sing Ming, talks on Sozan's verses on the faith mind. Number 1.
The Master Sozan said, "The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinion for or against. The struggle of what one likes and what one dislikes is the disease of the mind."
We will be entering the beautiful world of a Zen master's no mind. Sozan is the third Zen patriarch. Nothing much is known about him. It is as it should be, because history records only violence. It does not record silence. It cannot record. All records are of disturbance. Whenever someone becomes really silent, he disappears from all records. He is no more a part of our madness. So, it is as it should be. Sozan remained a wandering monk his whole life. He never stayed anywhere. He was always passing, going, moving. He was a river. He was not a pond, static. He was a constant movement. That is the meaning of Buddha's wanderers. Not only in the outside world, but in the inside world also, they should be homeless. Because whenever you make a home, you become attached to it. This would remain rootless. There is no home for them except this whole universe. Even when it was recognized that Sozan has become enlightened, he continues his old beggar's way. And nothing is special about him. He was an ordinary man, the man of Tao. For one thing I would like to say, and you have to remember it, Zen is a crossbreeding. And as more beautiful flowers can come out of crossbreeding, more beautiful children are born out of crossbreeding. The same has happened with Zen. Zen is a crossbreeding between Buddha's thought and Lao Tzu's thought. It is a great meeting, the greatest that ever took place. That's why Zen is more beautiful than Buddha's thought and more beautiful than Lao Tzu's thought. It is a rare flowering of the highest peaks and the meeting of those peaks. Zen is neither Buddhist nor Taoist, but it carries both within it. India is a little too much serious about religion. A long past, a long weight on the mind of India, and religion has become serious. Lao Tzu remained a laughing stock. Lao Tzu is known as the old fool. He is not serious at all. You cannot find more non-serious a man. And then Buddha's thought and Lao Tzu's thought meet. India and China meet. And Zen is born. And this Sozan was just near the original source when Zen was coming out of the womb. He carries the fundamental. His biography is not relevant at all. Because whenever a man becomes enlightened, he has no biography. He is no more the form. So when he was born, when he died, are irrelevant facts. That's why in the East we have never bothered about biographies, historical facts. That obsession has never been here. That obsession has come from the West now. Then people become interested more in irrelevant things. When a Sozan is born, what difference does it make this year or that? When he dies, how it is important? Sozan is important, not his entry in this world and the body, not his departure. Arrivals and departures are irrelevant. The only relevance is in the being. And these are the only words Sozan uttered. Remember, they are not words, because they come out of a mind who has gone beyond words. They are not speculations. They are authentic experiences. Whatsoever he says, he knows. He is not a man of knowledge. He is a wise man. He has penetrated the mystery, and whatsoever he brings is very significant. It can transform you completely, totally. If you listen to him, the very listening can become a transformation. Because whatsoever he is saying is the purest gold. But then it is difficult too, because the distance is very, very much between you and him. You are a mind and he is no mind. Even if you use his words, he is saying something in silence. You, even if you remain silent, go on chattering with him. It happened, there was a case against Mullah Nasruddin in the court. The court could not prove much. He was charged for polygamy, having many wives. Everybody knew about it. But nobody could prove. And the liar said to Nasruddin that you remain silent, that's all. If you utter a single word, you will be caught. So you simply keep quiet and I will look to the matter. Mullah Nasruddin remained silent, deep down boiling in turmoil, wanted to interrupt many times, but somehow managed and controlled himself. Outwardly looked like a Buddha, inside a madman. The court couldn't find anything against him. The magistrate, even though he knew that this man has many wives in the town, but when there was no proof, what he can do? So the magistrate had to release him. He said, Mullah Nasruddin, you are released. Now you can go home. Mullah Nasruddin looked puzzled and said, Your Honor, which home? He had many homes because many wives in the town. But a single word from you will sow the mind inside. A single word and your whole being is exposed. Not even a word is needed, just a gesture and your chattering mind will be there. Even if you are silent, your silence will not reveal anything else than the chattering monkey within. When a Sozan speaks, he speaks totally on a different plane. He is not interested in speaking. He is not interested in influencing anybody. He is not trying to convince you about some theory or philosophy or ism. No. When he speaks, his silence blooms. When he speaks, he is saying that which he has come to know and would like to share with you. It is not to convince you, remember. It is just to share with you. And if you can understand his single word, you will feel a tremendous silence being released within you. Just hearing here, we will be talking about Sozan and his words. If you listen attentively, suddenly you feel a release of silence within you. These words are atomic. They are full of energy. Whenever a person who has attained speaks something, the word is a seed. And for millions of years, the word will remain a seed and will seek a heart. If you are ready to become the soil, then these words, these tremendously powerful words of Sozan, they are still alive. They are seeds. They will enter in your heart if you allow. And you will be totally different through them. Don't listen to them from the mind, because the mind carries no meaning about them. The mind is absolutely impotent to understand them. They don't come from the mind. They cannot be understood by the mind. They come from a no mind. They can be understood only by a state of no mind. So while listening here, don't try to interpret. Don't listen to the words, but the gaps between the lines. not what he says, but what he means. The significance, let that significance hover around you like a fragrance. Silently it will enter you. You will become pregnant. But don't interpret. Don't say he means this or that, because that interpretation will be yours. Once it happened, Mulla Nasruddin was coming back, completely drunk, in the wee hours of the morning. He was passing from a cemetery. He looked at the signboard on it. It was written on the signboard with big letters, capital letters, "Ring for the caretaker." That's what he did. Of course, so early in the morning, the caretaker was disturbed. He came out, staggering, angry. And when he looked at Nasruddin, absolutely drunk, he became even more angry. He asked, "Why? Why you ringed? Why you rang for me? What is the matter? What do you want?" Nasruddin looked at him for 1 minute silently, then looked at the signboard and said, "I want to know, why can't you ring that damn bell yourself? Written, it was, ring for the caretaker." Now, how to interpret it? It depends on you. Don't interpret, listen. And when you interpret, you can't listen, because the consciousness cannot do two opposite things simultaneously. If you start thinking, listening stops. Just listen as you listen to music. A different quality of listening, because you don't interpret. There is no meaning in the sounds. This is also a music. This Sozan is a musician, not a philosopher. This Sozan is not saying words. He is saying more than the words. They have a significance, but they don't have any meaning. They are like musical sounds. You go and sit near a waterfall. You listen to it. But do you interpret what the waterfall says? It says nothing. Still it says. It says much, much that cannot be said. What you do near a waterfall? You listen. You become silent and quiet. You absorb. You allow the waterfall to go deeper and deeper within you. Then everything becomes quiet and silent within. You become a temple. Unknown enters through the waterfall. What do you do when you listen to the sounds of the birds? Or wind passing through the trees? Or dry leaves being blown by the breeze? What do? You simply listen. This Sozan is not a philosopher. He is not a theologian. He is not a priest. He does not want to sell any idea to you. He is not interested in ideas. He is not to convince you. He is simply blooming. He is a waterfall. Or he is a wind blowing through the trees. Or he is just a song of the birds. No meaning, but much significance. You have to absorb that significance. Only then you will be able to understand. So listen, but don't think. And then much is possible to happen within you, because I say, this man, this Sozan about whom nothing much is known. He was a man of power, a man who has come to know. And when he says something, he carries something of the unknown to the world of the known. With him enters the divine, a ray of light into the darkness of your mind. Before we enter into his words, remember the significance of the words, not the meaning. The music, the melody, not the meaning. The sound of his soundless mind, his heart, not his thinking. You have to listen to his being, the waterfall. How to listen? Just be silent. Don't bring your mind in. Don't start thinking what he is saying. Just listen without deciding this way or that, without saying whether he is right or wrong, whether you are convinced or not. He does not bother about your conviction. You also need not bother about it. You simply listen and delight. Such persons like Suzanne are to be delighted in. They are natural phenomena. A beautiful rock. What you do with it? You delight in it, you touch, you go around it, you feel it, the mass on it. What do you do with clouds moving in the sky? You dance on the earth, you look at them, or you just keep quiet and lie down on the ground and look at them and let them float, and they fill you. Not only in the outer sky, by and by, the more you become silent, they fill your inner sky also. Suddenly you are not there, only clouds are moving in and out. The division is dropped, the boundary is no more there, you have become the sky and the sky has become you. Treat Suzanne as a natural phenomenon. He is not a man, he is God, he is Tao. He is a Buddha. Before we try to move into his significance, few things have to be understood. They will give you a push. Mind is a disease. This is a basic truth the East has discovered. The West says, mind can become ill, can be healthy. The Western psychology depends on this. The mind can be healthy or ill, but the East says, mind as such is the disease, it cannot be healthy. No psychiatry will help. At the most, you can make it normally ill. So there are two types of illnesses in mind. Normally ill, that means you have the same illness as others around you. Or abnormally ill, that means you are something unique. Your disease is not ordinary, exceptional. Your disease is individual, not of the crowd. That's the only difference. Normally ill or abnormally ill, but mind cannot be healthy. Why? The East says, the very nature of mind is such, it will remain unhealthy. The word health is beautiful. It comes from the same word as the whole. Health, healing, whole, holy, they all come from the same root. The mind cannot be healthy because it can never be whole. Mind is always divided. Division is its base. And if it cannot be whole, how it can be healthy? And if it cannot be healthy, how it can be holy? All minds are profane. There is nothing like a holy mind. A holy man lives without the mind because he lives without division. Mind is the disease. And what is the name of that disease? Aristotle is the name. Or if you really want to make it look like a disease, then you can coin a word, Aristotelitis. Then it exactly looks like a disease. Why Aristotle is the disease? Because Aristotle says either this or that. Choose. And choice is the function of the mind. Mind cannot be choiceless. And choose or you are in the trap. Because whenever you choose, you have chosen something against something else. If you are for something, you must be against something. You cannot be only for. You cannot be only against. When the for enters, the against follows as a shadow. When the against is there, the for it must be there, hidden or not hidden. When you choose, you divide. Then you say, this is good, that is wrong. And life is a unity. Existence remains undivided. Existence remains in a deep unison. It is oneness. If you say this is beautiful and that is ugly, mind has entered. Because life is both together. And the beautiful becomes ugly and the ugly goes on becoming beautiful. There is no boundary. No watertight compartments are there. Life goes on flowing from this to that. Mind has fixed compartments. Fixedness is the nature of mind and fluidity is the nature of life. That's why mind is obsession. It is always fixed. It has a solidness about it. And life is not solid, fluid, flexible. Goes on moving to the opposite. Something is alive this moment, next moment it is dead. Someone was young this moment, next moment he has become old. The eyes were so beautiful, now they are no more there. Just ruins. And the face was so rose-like, now nothing is there. Not even a ghost of the past. Beautiful becomes ugly. Life becomes death. And death goes on taking new birth. What to do with life? You cannot choose. If you want to be with life, with the whole, you have to be choiceless. Mind is a choice. And Aristotle made it the base of his logic and philosophy. You cannot find a man more distant from Suzanne than Aristotle. Because Sozan says neither this nor that. Don't choose. Sozan says be choiceless. Sozan says don't make distinctions. The moment you make a distinction, the moment choice enters, you are already divided, fragmentary. You have become ill. You are not whole. Remember, if you ask a Christian who does not really belong to Jesus, who basically belongs to Aristotle, Christianity is more Aristotle-based than Christ-based. Jesus was more like Sozan. He says, don't judge. Judge ye not. He says, don't make any choice. Don't say this is good and that is bad. That is not your concern. Let the whole decide. You don't be a judge. But Christianity is not really Jesus-oriented. The founders of Christianity were more Aristotelian than Christians. You cannot make a church out of Sozan or Jesus. How can you make a church if you remain choiceless? A church has to be for something and against something. It has to be for God and against the devil. And in life, God and devil are not two. They are one. Devil is the face. God is the face of the same energy. They are not two. Sometimes he comes as a devil and sometimes he comes as a God. And if you can go deep and look, you will find the same. Sometimes he comes as a thief and sometimes he comes as a virtuous man. Sometimes you will find him in the respectable quarters and sometimes to those who are not respected but condemned. He moves. He is a movement. And no soul is far distant for him to reach. Nobody is beyond him. He moves in everybody. Jesus makes no distinctions, but Christianity makes, because a religion has to make. A religion has to become a morality. And once a religion becomes a morality, it is no more a religion. Religion is the greatest daring possible. It is the greatest courage to be choiceless, because the mind says choose, the mind says say something, this is wrong, that is good, this is beautiful. This is ugly. I love this. I hate that. Mind says choose. Mind has a temptation to divide. Once you divide, mind is at ease. If you don't divide, if you say, I'm not going to say anything, I'm not going to judge, mind feels as if it is on its deathbed. Aristotle says A is A. And cannot be not A. The opposites cannot meet. Sozan says there are no opposites. They are already meeting. They have always been meeting. This is one of the most fundamental truths to be realized, that the opposites are not opposites. It is you who say they are opposites. Otherwise, they are not opposites. Look existentially and you will feel they are the same energy. You love a person. One woman came to me and she said that for 10 years I have been married to a person and we never quarreled. And now suddenly, what happened? He has left me. Now she thinks that they never quarreled. It shows they were in deep love. This is foolish. But this is Aristotelian. The woman is absolutely logical. She says, for 10 years we have been married. We never quarreled. We were never angry at each other. She is saying that we were in so deep love that we never fought for anything. There was not even a single moment of conflict. And now, what happened? Suddenly he has left me. Has he gone mad? Our love was so deep. She is wrong. If love is deep, then there is bound to be some quarrels. Sometimes you will fight. And the fight is not going to break the love, it enriches it. If love is there, it will be enriched by a fight. If love is not there, then you depart. You separate. 10 years is a long time, even 24 hours is too long to be constantly in one state of mind. Because mind moves to the opposite. You love a person, sometimes you feel angry. Really, you feel angry only because you love. Sometimes you hate. Sometimes you would like to sacrifice yourself for your lover, and sometimes you would like to kill the lover. And both are you. For 10 years, if you never quarrel, it means there was no love at all. It means it was not a relationship. And you were so afraid that any anger, any conflict, any slight thing can break down the whole thing. You were so afraid you never quarreled. You never believed that the love can go deeper than the quarrel. And the quarrel will be momentary. And after the quarrel, you will fall into each other's arms more deeply. No, you never trusted that. That's why you manage not to fight. And this is not something to be surprised that the man has left. I asked, I'm surprised why he remained with you for 10 years. Why? One man came to me and he said, something has gone with my son. I have known him for 20 years. He was always obedient. Such a good boy you cannot find anywhere. He never disobeyed. He never went against me. And now suddenly he has become a hippie. Now suddenly he doesn't listen. He looks towards me as if I am not his father at all. He looks as if I am a stranger. And for 20 years he was so obedient. What has happened to my son? Nothing has happened. This is what was to be expected. Because if a son really loves his father, he disobeys also. Whom else he should disobey? If a son really loves his father and trusts him, sometimes he goes away also. Because he knows the relationship is so deep, by disobeying it is not going to be broken. Rather, on the contrary, it will be enriched. The opposite enriches. Really, the opposite is not opposite. It is just a rhythm. A rhythm of the same. You obey and then you disobey. It is a rhythm. Otherwise, just going on obeying, obeying, everything becomes monotonous and dead. Monotony is the nature of death. Because the opposite is not there. Life is alive. The opposite is there. A rhythm is there. You move. you come back. You depart, you arrive. You disobey, then you obey also. You love and you hate. This is life, but not logic. Logic says if you love, you cannot hate. If you love, how you can be angry? If you love, then you love in a monotonous way, the same pitch. But then you will become tense, then it is impossible to relax. Logic believes in linear phenomena. In one line you move. Life believes in circles. The same line goes up, comes down, becomes a circle. You must have seen the Chinese circle of yin and yang. That is how life, if opposites meeting, that circle of yin and yang, half white, half black, and in the white there is a black spot, and in the black there is a white spot, and the white moving into the black, and the black moving into a white, and it is a circle. The woman moving into the man, the man moving into the woman. This is life. And if you observe minutely, you will see it within you. A man is not 24 hours man. Cannot be. Sometimes he is a woman. A woman is not 24 hours a man. Sometimes he is a woman. Sometimes he is a man also. They move to the opposite. When a woman is angry, she is no more a woman. She becomes more aggressive than any man, and she is more dangerous than any man. Because her manhood is purer and never used. So whenever she uses it, it has a sharpness no man can compete. It is just soil which has not been used for many, many years. Then you throw the seeds and the bumper crop. A woman sometimes becomes man, but when she becomes, then no man can compete. Then she is very dangerous. Then it is better for man to submit. And that's what all men do. They become submissive. They surrender. Because immediately you have to become the woman, otherwise there will be trouble. Two swords in one sheath, there will be trouble. If the woman has become the man, if she has changed the role, immediately the man becomes the woman. Now everything is established. Again the circle is complete. And whenever a man becomes submissive and surrenders, that surrender has a purity no woman can compete. Because ordinarily he is never in that posture, in that game. Ordinarily he is tense and fighting. Ordinarily he is a will, not surrender. But whenever he surrenders, it has an innocence that no woman can compete. Look at a man in love. He becomes just a small child. But this is how life moves. And if you understand it, then you are not worried at all. Then you know the lover has departed, he will come back. The beloved is angry, she will love. Then you have patience. With Aristotle you cannot have any patience, because if a lover has departed, he has departed on a linear journey, no coming back. It is not a circle. But in the East, we believe in the circle. In the West, they believe in the line. The Western mind is linear. The Eastern mind is circular. So in the East, a lover can wait. He knows the woman now who has left him will come. She will be already on the way. She must be already repenting. She must have already repented. She must be coming sooner or later. She will knock the door. Just wait. Because the opposite is always there. And whenever a woman after anger comes back, then love again is fresh. Now it is not repetition. The gap of anger destroyed the past. Now she is again a young girl, a virgin girl. Again falls in love. Everything becomes fresh. If you understand this, then you are not against anything. You know, even anger is beautiful. Even a quarrel here and there gives tone to life. And everything helps the richness. Then you accept. Then deep in acceptance you are patient. Then there is no impatience and no hurry. Then you can wait and pray and hope and dream. Otherwise, if life is linear, as Aristotle thinks, or as the Western thinking has moved from Aristotle to Bertrand Russell, then life has much impatience. Nobody is going to come back. Then you are always trembling, afraid, and then you become suppressive. Then you may stay with a woman for 10 years or for 10 lives, but that staying is with a stranger. You are controlling you, she is controlling herself, and there is no meeting. Life is not logic. Logic is just a part. Of course, very clean cut, categorized, compartmented, divided. But life is messy. But what to do? It is so. It is not so compartmented, so clear cut, divided. It is a chaos. But logic is dead and life is alive. So the question is whether to choose consistency or to choose life. If you are too much for consistency, you will become dead and deadlier and deadlier. Because consistency is possible only if you drop the opposite completely. Then you love and only love and only love and never angry, never hate, never fight. You obey, only obey, never disobedience, never rebellion, never going away. But then everything becomes stale. Then the relationship becomes poisonous. Then it kills. This Suzanne is not for logic. He is for life. Now, try to understand the significance of his word. Says he, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinion for or against. The struggle of what one likes and what one dislikes is the disease of the mind. Just like Chuang Tzu, easy is right. The great way is not difficult. If it appears difficult, it is you who make it difficult. The great way is easy. How it can be difficult? Even trees follow it. Rivers follow it. Rocks follow it. How it can be difficult? Even birds fly in it and fishes swim in it. How it can be difficult? Man makes it difficult. Mind makes it difficult. And the trick to make any easy thing difficult is to choose, to make a distinction. Love is easy, hate is easy. But you choose. You say, I will only love, I will not hate. Now everything has become difficult. Now you cannot even love. To breathe in is easy, to breathe out is easy. You choose. You say, I will only breathe in, I will not breathe out. Now everything has become difficult. And the mind can say, why breathe out? Breath is life. Simple arithmetic. Go on breathing in, don't breathe out. You will become more and more alive. More and more life will be accumulated, you will become a great treasure of life. Breathe in only. Don't breathe out, because breathing out is death. Remember, the first thing a child has to do when he is born is to breathe in. And the last thing, when a man dies, will be to breathe out. Life begins with breathing in, and death begins with breathing out. Each moment when you breathe in, you are reborn. Each moment when you breathe out, you are dead. Because breath is life. That's why Hindus have called it prana. Prana means life. Breath is life. The simple logic, simple arithmetic, there is not much trouble. You can make it plain that more and more breathe in and don't breathe out, then you will never die. If you breathe out, you will have to die. And if you do it too much, you will die soon. Arithmetic, simple, easy. Appears easy. So, what a logician is supposed to do? A logician will only breathe in, never breathe out. Love is breathing in, hate is breathing out. So what to do? Life is easy if you don't decide. Because then you know breathing in and breathing out are not two opposite things. They are two parts of one process. And those two parts are organic parts. You cannot divide them. And if you don't breathe out, the logic is wrong. You will not be alive, you will be simply immediately dead. Try. Just breathe in and don't breathe out. You will understand. You will become very, very tense. The whole being would like to breathe out. Because this is going to be death. If you choose, you will be in difficulty. If you don't choose, everything is easy. Easy is right. If man is in difficulty, it is because of too many teachers who have poisoned your mind, who have been teaching you, choose this, don't do this, do that. Their do's and don'ts have killed you. And they look logical. If you go to argue with them, they will win the argument. Logic will help them. Look, it is so simple. Why breathe out if it is death? And this has happened, not with breathing, or even with breathing. There are schools of yoga who say that your life is counted through breath. not in years, but in breaths your life is counted. So breathe slowly. If you take 12 breaths in 1 minute, you will die soon. Take 6 or 3, then you will live long. Nobody has succeeded, but people go on trying. Breathe slowly. Why? Because if you breathe slowly, less and less the breath will be outgoing. So less death will happen to you. Or longer you will be able to live. The only thing that will happen will be your zest of life will be lost. It will not be lengthened. It may appear long. It is said that married people live long than bachelors. So somebody asked Nasruddin, is it true, Nasruddin? Nasruddin said, it appears. A married man does not live long, but it appears that he has been living long. Because when there is much trouble, time seems longer. When there is no trouble, time seems shorter. These so-called yogis who go on breathing less and less and is slow, they slow down the process of life only. They are less alive, that's all. They will not be longer alive, less alive. They are not living fully. Their candle is not burning perfectly. The zest, the enthusiasm, the dance is lost. They drag themselves, that's all. And this has happened with sex. Because with sex people think death enters, and they are right. Because sex energy gives birth to life. So more sex energy moves out you, more life is moving. Logical. Absolutely Aristotelian, but foolish. And you cannot find greater fools than logicians. It is logical that life energy comes from sex. A child is born because of sex. So sex is the source of life. So keep it in. Don't allow it to go out. Otherwise you will be dead. So the whole world has become afraid. But it is the same. Just like keep the breath in, then the whole being wants to throw it out. So your so-called brahmacharis, celibates, who try to keep the sex energy in, the semen in, the whole body wants to throw it out. Their whole life becomes sexual. Their mind becomes sexual. They dream of sex. They think of sex. Sex becomes their obsession. Because they are trying to do something. Logical, of course. But not true to life. And they don't live long. They die soon. This is a new finding, a new research. That a man lives longer if he makes his love life prolong as much as possible. If a man can make love at 80 years of age, he will live longer. Why? Because the more you breathe out, the more you breathe in. So exactly, if you want more life, breathe out more. So you create vacuum inside and more breath comes in. You don't think about breathing in. You simply exhale out as much as you can, and your whole being will inhale. Love more, that is breathing out, and your body will gather energy from the whole cosmos. You create the vacuum and the energy comes. It is just like this. In every process of life, you eat, but then you become a miser. You become constipated. The logic is right. Don't breathe out. Constipation is choosing breathing in far and being against breathing out. Almost every civilized person is constipated. You can measure civilization through constipation. More constipated a country, more civilized. Because more logical. Why breathe out? Just go on breathing in. Food is energy. Why throw it out? You may not be aware this is the unconscious. Getting logical and Aristotelian. But life is a balance between throwing out and inviting in. You are just a passage. Share, give, and more will be given to you. Be a miser. Don't give, and less will be given to you because you don't need. Remember and watch your life processes. If you are really interested in understanding and enlightenment ultimately, remember to give so that more is given to you, whatsoever it is. Breathe out, exhale more. That is what sharing means, giving means. Gift is giving your energies, so more is given to you. But the mind says it has its own logic. And Suzanne calls that logic the disease. The great way is not difficult. You make it difficult. You are difficult. The great way is easy. For those who have no preferences, don't prefer. Just allow life to move. You don't say to life, move this way, go to north. Or go to the south. You don't say. You simply flow with life. You don't fight against the current. You become one with the current. For those who have no preferences, the great way is easy for those who have no preferences. And you have preferences about everything. About everything you bring your mind in. You say, I like, I don't like. I prefer this, I don't prefer that. When love and hate are both absent, when you have no preferences, all foreign against attitudes are absent. Both love and hate are absent. You neither like something nor dislike something. You simply allow everything to happen. Everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. But your mind will say, you will become an animal. If you don't prefer, if you don't choose, then what will be the difference between you and a tree? There will be a difference, a great difference, but not the difference which brings mind in. a difference which comes through awareness. The tree is choiceless, unconscious. You will be choiceless, conscious. That is what choiceless awareness means. And that is the greatest distinction. You will be aware that you are not choosing. And this awareness gives such profound peace. You become a Buddha, you become a Sozan, a Chuang Tzu. The tree cannot become a Chuang Tzu. Chuang Tzu is like the tree and plus. He is like the tree as far as choice is concerned. He is absolutely unlike the tree as far as awareness is concerned. He is fully aware that he is not choosing. When love and hate are both absent, while love and hate both give color to your eyes, and then you cannot see clear. If you love a person, you start seeing things which are not there. No woman is so beautiful as you think when you love her, because you project. You have a dream girl in the mind. That dream girl is projected. Somehow, the real girl functions only as a screen. That's why every love comes to a frustrating point sooner or later. Because how the girl can go on playing the screen? She is a real person, she will assert, she will say, I am not a screen. How long she can go on fitting with your projection? Sooner or later you feel they don't fit. In the beginning, she yielded. In the beginning, you yielded. You were a projection screen for her. She was a projection screen for you. Mulla Nasruddin's wife was saying to him, I overheard it. She was saying, you don't love me as much as you loved before. When you were courting me, Mulla Nasruddin said, darling, don't pay much attention to those things. They were just campaign propaganda. I forget what you said. You forget what I said. Now let us be real. Nobody can play a screen for you forever, because it is uncomfortable. How can somebody adjust to your dream? He has his own reality, and the reality asserts. If you love a person, you project things which are not there. If you hate a person, again you project things which are not there. In love, the person becomes a god. In hate, the person becomes a devil. And the person is neither god nor devil. The person is simply himself or herself. These devils and gods are projections. If you love, you cannot see clearly. If you hate, you cannot see clearly. When there is no liking, no disliking, your eyes are clear. You have a clarity. Then you see the other as he is or as she is. And when you have a clarity of consciousness, the whole existence reveals its reality to you. That reality is God. That reality is truth. What does it mean? A man like Sozan will not love. His love will have a totally different quality. It will not be like you. He will love, but his love will not be a choice. He will love, but his love will not be a projection. He will love, but his love will not be a love to his own dream. He will love the real. That love towards the real is compassion. He will not project this way or that. He will not see a God in you or a devil. He will simply see you and he will share because he has enough. And the more you share, the more it grows. He will share his ecstasy with you. When you love, you project. You love not to give. You love to take. You love to exploit. When you love a person, you start trying to fix the person according to you, according to your ideas. Every husband is doing that. Every wife is doing that. Every friend. They go on trying to change the other, the real. And the real cannot be changed. Only you will get frustrated. The real cannot be changed. Only your dream will be settled. And then you feel hurt. You don't listen to reality. Nobody is here to fulfill your dream. Everybody is here to fulfill his own destiny, his own reality. A man like Suzan loves, but his love is not an exploitation. He loves because he has got too much. He is overflowing. He is not creating a dream around anybody. Whosoever comes on his path, he shares. His sharing is unconditional. And he does not expect a thing from you. If love expects, then there will be frustration. If love expects, then there will be unfulfillment. If love expects, there is going to be misery and madness. No, says Suzan, neither love nor hate. You simply look at the reality of the other. This is Buddha's love. To see at the reality of the other. To see as the other is. Just to see the reality, not to project, not to dream. Not to create an image. Not to try the other to fix according to your image. Well, love and hate are both absent. Everything becomes clear and undisguised. Mind has to love and hate. And mind has to go continuously fighting between these two. If you don't love and don't hate, you go beyond mind. Where is the mind then? Within you, with choice, mind disappears. Even if you say, I would like to be silent, you will never be silent because you have a preference. This is the problem. People come to me and they say, I would like to be silent. I don't want these tensions anymore. I feel sorry for them. Sorry because what they are saying is stupid. If you don't want tensions anymore, you will create new. Because this not wanting is going to create a new tension. And if you want too much silence, if you are too much after it, your silence itself will become a tension. You will be more disturbed because of it now. What is silence? It is a deep understanding. Understanding of the phenomena that if you prefer, you will be tense. Even if you prefer silence, you will be tense. Understand. Feel it. Whenever you prefer, you become tense. Whenever you don't prefer, there is no tension. You are relaxed. And when you are relaxed, your eyes have a clarity. They are not crowded with clouds and dreams. No thoughts move in the mind. You can see through. And when you can see the truth, it liberates. Truth liberates. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. A smallest distinction, a slightest choice, and you are divided. Then you have a hell and a heaven. And between these two, you will be crushed. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinion for or against. Move without opinion. Move naked, with no clothes, with no opinions towards truth. Because truth abhors all opinions. Drop all your philosophies, theories, doctrines, scriptures. Drop all hubris, all rubbish. You go silent, unchoosing. Your eyes just ready to see what is, not in any way hoping to see some of your wish fulfilled. Don't carry wishes. It is said the path of hell is completely filled with wishes, good wishes, hopes, dreams, rainbows, ideals. The path of heaven is absolutely empty. Drop all the burdens. The higher you want to reach, less burden. If you go to the Himalayas, you have to unburden yourself completely. Finally, when you reach to Gaurishankar, the Everest, you have to drop everything. You have to go completely naked, because the higher you move, the more weightless you are needed to be. And opinions are weights on you. They are not wings, they are like paper weights. Opinionless, without any preference. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinion for or against. Don't be a theist, and don't be an atheist if you really want to know what truth is. Don't say there is God. Don't say there is not. Because whatsoever you say will become a deep desire. And whatsoever is there hidden in the desire, you will project. If you want to see God as a Krishna with a flute on his lips, someday you will see him. Not because Krishna is there, only because you had a seed of desire you projected on the screen of the world. If you want to see Jesus crucified, you will see. Whatsoever you want will be projected, but it is just a dream world. You are not coming nearer to the truth. Become seedless within. No opinion, no thought for or against, no philosophy. You simply go to see that which is. You don't carry any mind. You go mindless. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinion for or against. The struggle of what one likes and what one dislikes is the disease of the mind. This is the disease of the mind, what one likes and what one does not like, for and against. Why the mind is divided? Why you cannot be one You would like, you wish to be one, but you go on watering the divisions, the preferences, likes and dislikes. Just the other day, one woman came and she said, "Bless me, I would like your blessings." But I saw she was troubled, worried. So I asked, "What is the matter?" She said, "But I am already initiated by another master." A struggle. She wants my blessings, but the mind says that I am not her master. She has another master, so what to do? I told her to drop both. It will be easier if I say to her, "Drop the old, choose me." It will be easier, because then the mind can go on functioning. But the trouble will remain the same. The name of the disease will change, but the disease will remain same. Again somewhere else, the same doubt will arise, the same wavering. But if I say drop both, because that is the only way to reach to a master. When you don't have any preference, this way or that, you simply come empty. You simply come without an opinion. You simply come vacant, receptive. Only then you come to a master. There is no other way. And if the master is going to become the door for the truth, this is going to be so, because this is the preparation, this is the initiation. A master is to help you to become opinionless, mindless. If the master himself becomes your choice, then he will be a barrier. Then you have again chosen. Again the mind has been used, and the more you use the mind, the more it is strengthened. More is stronger it becomes. Don't use it. Difficult. Because you will say, what will happen to our love? What will happen to our belonging? What will happen to our beliefs? What will happen to our religion, church and the temple? They are your burdens. Be freed of them, and let them be freed of you. They are keeping you here, rooted, and truth would want you to be liberated. Liberated you reach, with wings you reach, weightless you reach. Says Suzanne, the struggle of what one likes and what one dislikes is the disease of the mind. How to overcome it? Is there any way to overcome it? No, there is no way. One has simply to understand. One has simply to look at the facticity of it. One has just to close his eyes and look at his own life, watch it, and you will feel the truth of Suzanne. And when you feel the truth, the disease drops. There is no medicine for it. Because if medicine is given to you, you will start liking the medicine. Then disease will be forgotten, but medicine will be liked. And then medicine becomes a disease. No, Suzanne is not going to give you any medicine, any method. He is not going to suggest you what to do. He is simply going to insist again and again and again, 1,001 times, to understand how you have created this whole mess around you, how you are in such a misery. Nobody else has created it. It is your mind's disease of preference, of choosing. Don't choose. Accept life as it is in its totality. You must look at the total. Life and death together. Love and hate together. Happiness, unhappiness together. Agony, ecstasy together. If you live together, then what is to choose? If you see they are one, then from where choice can enter? If you see agony is nothing but ecstasy, ecstasy nothing but agony. If you can see happiness is nothing but unhappiness, love is nothing but hate, hate is nothing but love, then where to choose? How to choose? Then choice drops. You are not dropping it. If you drop it, that will become a choice. This is the paradox. You are not supposed to drop it, because if you drop it, it means you have chosen for and against. Now, your choice is for totality. You are for totality and against division. But the disease has entered. It is subtle. You simply understand, and the very understanding becomes dropping. You never drop it. You simply laugh and you ask for a cup of tea. Enough for today?